Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is my co-host,
Scotty Hertz. I got those bees out of my eyes, and I'm ready to go. Did you hear that story? The woman with the bees in her eyes.
No.
Living off of her tears, and she had to go to the doctor to get them out. It was in Malaysia or somewhere down there. So
not going there.
I've wiped the bees. Probably beers as well. And starting fresh, I can see clearly now the bees are gone.
Well, that's a good segue for our first topic anyway. Yeah. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today, Donald Trump is at it again.
Oh my goodness.
He's cleaning house at the Department of Homeland Security because they don't seem to be breaking the laws fast enough for his liking. And we'll talk about why this is a pretty big deal. And then most Canadians think white right-wing hate groups are a problem. But do some members of the opposition think that? And what are we going to do about it? It's been a pretty big week for taking action against hate groups. And then finally, election interference. It has happened. It's happening. It will happen again. So what are we going to do about it? So the first topic, though, before we get to all that, is breaking news. Oh, what?
Right on the money.
Okay.
Breaking news, right on the button, once again.
So. All right.
Adam just saw my hand go up in the air, which usually means a bad thing, but everything's cool.
I thought.
At HQ here, so.
All right, good. Moving
Although,
right along.
Although, you know, tensions are high because the budget is it still dropping? Does he do it within an hour? This is the problem with things that are happening when we're about to go on. That's why they did it, right? That's why they did the budget today.
Because they knew
we were going to talk about it.
It's an F you to us, for sure.
We had to cram.
Ultimately, at the end, they have the speech at 4 o'clock, and this goes for, like, provincial and federal. They have the speech at 4 o'clock, but what happens is all the reporters covering it are in lockup from, I think, pretty much 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning till just before the budget speech, and they're reading the budget. They go in the morning, they hand over their cell phone and any, like, means of communicating with the outside, and are given the budget. They go over the document, pretty much write their stories as it's happening, as throughout the day, and then when 4 o'clock comes along, the embargo's out, and so they just everything gets posted.
It's like an old-fashioned retreat.
So the speech is ultimately superfluous. I mean, so you don't really need to watch it in order to get the information as it's happening, because all the stories are posted as it's happening. So we'll give you the key highlights from the Ontario 2019 budget as per the CBC. Some of these have been announced in the previous days leading up to this, so it may not exactly be breaking news. So you have the Ontario Child Care Access and Relief from Expenses Tax Credit, or CARE, if you will, which is a tax credit for people who get child care, which is, you know, several million people in the province. Car insurance changes. So it's going to make it easier to get, and you're going to have a variety of coverage options, according to the PC government. There's also going to be a new Drive Care card, which you'll be able to transfer, you know, information more easily. Booze and gambling.
Tell me more.
They want to open it casinos beyond the ones run by the OLG. Every casino that is in Ontario is run by the OLG.
Oh,
they
like the Ontario Place one?
Yes.
That's not happening? Wink? Yeah.
Anyway, there's also going to be some more sports betting, single sport betting. There's a lot of that in the United States right now, but they want to bring that to Canada. There's also, under the same category, it's going to make it easier to tailgate, have these tailgating parties that they tried to experiment with the Argos that basically said you can come tailgate, but you have to buy the beer there. But now it'll make it possible for you to bring your own beer, BYOB.
Sorry, that was for all the tailgaters out there.
There's also a business tax credit. They're not going to cut the corporate tax rate by one percentage point. Instead, they're going to offer tax credits that would allow companies to write off capital expenses. So actually, that doesn't sound too terrible, because I think one of the biggest problems with especially some of the bigger corporations is their unwillingness to spend money that they're sitting on.
Hmm.
So that might get some juices flowing, as it were. They're promising to balance the budget by 2023-24 fiscal year. That would be a year after the next election. Dental care for low-income seniors, which isn't a terrible idea. License plate changes. So as you may have heard, the new slogan for Ontario is a place to grow, which was not meant to be...
Which is the old slogan.
But also not meant to be construed with...
with weed. Oh, yes. Sorry, cannabis.
Cirque du Soleil is teaming up with the government to put on 80 to 90 shows at Ontario Place this fall. So that's part of the revitalization of Ontario Place.
Really? So they're going to get back to... the way Ontario Place used to be.
I suppose.
Those subsidized shows.
I suppose.
That's not all bad.
And then the big one, though, is transit. And that was an announcement made yesterday at the Go. I think it was like one of the Go warehouses where they keep the buses and do the bus repairs and things like that. In Etobicoke, naturally.
Yeah.
So 11 million. Well, yeah. Dougie's backyard.
Something has to happen at Etobicoke.
So, $11 billion is going to be the province's share of that, plus hopefully another $17 billion from the feds and from the municipality, who neither of whom were invited to this monumentous transit event.
Do you think, and I saw that announcement, do you think they're anticipating that the feds will be a different set of feds and that's why they just rolled with it? That was my guess. When I saw it, it's like, and they're saying this money's going to come from the government. I'm like, well, how do you know? And I think Morneau was on, and he did the usual. The synthesized version is, well, we haven't really committed to anything. So
yeah,
and he was also trying to say that Toronto already had a plan in place. Why are you trashing that? That's the short version. At least that's what I got from it. So there's going to be a scrap over it probably. But I thought when I saw that they were anticipating a new government coming. It was just the way.
Well, they might, but I mean, if there's a new PC, if there's a new conservative government, I doubt it would be on the back of Toronto, which seems
no. But the money has to come from somewhere, right? So if there's a new conservative government, they'll say, "Here, Doug, here's your money."
But I mean,
build your subways.
The conservatives aren't like Toronto isn't going to vote in for a conservative government, I don't think, especially one led by Andrew Scheer.
No, but no.
So they're not going to go out of their way to, I mean, because that would be the appearance, right? That if there was suddenly a big resurgence of the conservatives in Ontario, it would be on the coattails of yep. Doug Ford. And if that were the case, maybe. Yep. But I don't think that's something you can make a bet on because
no, never.
Ontario's always been the weak link. Well, maybe not like Quebec, but you know, it's certainly been a weaker link.
Yeah, so and they tend to do these announcements. They want good news things in the lead up to what can be perceived as the slashing, which we haven't actually gotten to the meat and potatoes yet,
no.
But you can bet that I caught a bit of Fedeli's intro there, and he was talking about the mess we inherited, and there's such a challenge, and said it a few times, the fiscal mess. It's one part that I did catch fresh was that they're coming up with some kind of budget guarantee, and if they miss the deadlines or the goals or the targets, that the premier and the minister of finance are going to be dinged personally, financially, 10%.
That's one of the stupidest things
it's
I've ever
really
heard in my
dumb.
Life. I mean, it's one of these little symbolic things that, it, you know, like we're not going to take a pay increase, you know. I get it. You're showing your fiscal prudence. But you know what? Stuff happens, you know.
Yeah.
Like a great recession. If a great recession, I mean, I understand taking on personal responsibility for yourself and saying, I am going to spend tax money wisely and do the other thing. But if something like the Great Recession happens, where all of a sudden, like millions of people lose their jobs and you have factories and businesses closing all over the province, you mean to tell me that Doug Ford and Vic Fedeli are going to be like, well, I guess you got us this time.
Well, I think they specified that it was reporting. So it's like, you know, if the numbers aren't in by the time we ask them, that may be it.
All right.
As opposed to it sort of sounded like
stupid.
We're going to get punished personally if the budget isn't balanced.
It's still this stupid form of economic populism that says that a budget for a country or a province or even for a city is this, like running that is the exact same thing as running your kitchen table numbers.
And that's the thing too. I heard it at least once or Fedeli, they refer to the people the people of Ontario, which seems to be their famous or favorite phrase these days.
Government for the people.
As customers.
Yeah.
And that really bugs me. Because it's not like we're just, you know, we're checking out. It's like, do we use the self-checkout? Do we use the, you know, it's like they make it all about when you start calling people customers, then it's all almost purely about consumerism, right?
Right.
That's the next step where it's like, you're just a consumer of things that the government is going to present to you like it's a big giant store. And that's really structurally not how it works, right?
Well, there's a lot of that, like, too. Like
the customer's always right.
The changes to education, where we're going to have more people doing e-learning. I mean, that almost felt...
That's the self-checkout of education.
Yeah, yeah. And there were a lot of people who've come forward and said that they're concerned because people... Not every student is necessarily structured to be able to do their own independent learning like that. Not every student has the same access to technology and the internet. And it's not even just like a class thing. Like you could be the richest person in Thunder Bay, but you could still have horrible internet because the infrastructure just isn't the same as it is in, you know, Guelph or Milton or Hamilton or Toronto or wherever. So... I mean, I think what it comes down to, and Doug Ford's been sort of getting this criticism a lot, is that this is like oddly enough, it's an incredibly sort of Toronto-centric view of the province. And you see that with this transit plan, where it was clearly drawn up by people who've never taken a frickin' subway. Like, if your idea of a downtown relief line is to go from Ontario Place or an Exhibition Place, you know, up to Queen and Spadina, down to the Queen through the Queen Station and through the I can't remember the other name, Osgoode, Osgoode and Queen Station, and then up to Pape, and then up to the Ontario Science Center. That's not a downtown relief line. That's a like you want to drop the kids off at the Science Center and then go down to the new casino we're building at the waterfront relief line.
It was like they wanted to incorporate everything with Ontario in the name to the subway. So if it's got Ontario in it, we're going to put it on the line.
And the Ontario, yeah.
Right? Just it's Ontario Place, Ontario Science Center.
It's the Ontario line.
Government and, thingies.
And
we'll
it's
just
not going to be part of the TTC system. It's going to be like separate but equal.
And it sounded, the cars are going to be smaller. It sounded like that. Maybe they're going to work in that, remember the monorail that was at the zoo that was condemned? Yeah. It sounds like it might be something like that. Maybe not quite as tiny as that thing, but it seems big when you're a kid, but... But have you been on the Scarborough LRT, like the little one that's supposedly going to be at the end of its life soon? It is smaller, but as they are in a lot of places, but you can still move a lot of people with decent equipment, right?
Yeah, and they've added two more subway stops to the Scarborough subway that has yet to be built. And I think it was Mike Schreiner who made this point at his town hall a couple of weeks ago that if they had just left well enough alone, there would be an up and running Scarborough LRT. Fully paid for, ferrying people up and through Scarborough instead of a subway. More promises about subways when like a single hole hasn't been dug in the ground.
And that's going back to the Toronto days when the brothers were like subways, as I alluded to earlier, where it's just this: you just say subways, and people get really excited.
Roads for cars. We gotta put them underground in subways. Yeah, it costs 10 times as much, but we're fiscal conservatives.
There you go.
Anyway.
That's exactly what he said. Verbatim, that's what he said. Or something to that effect.
But I mean, it's so... And like the ass slaps and high fives about this yesterday with him and Eureka and McNaughton. And like, we're getting more Scarborough subway stops. Rob, this is for you, baby. It's... No, because you know what? Doug Ford has never taken a bus or a subway in his life, so he doesn't understand
under duress,
the demands.
Maybe. He'd be like, oh, okay, I'm not
I doubt even under duress.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but that doesn't
I think
mean
when Rob made that subway, like he went down to the subway station and then went back up again.
I've yet to watch that one with him and Jagmeet Singh on TVO where Jagmeet Singh gets him on a bicycle.
I don't.
After being on the...
I don't even freaking care.
Like, no, I just want to see it. I can't even visualize it, but
I'm kind of hating that kind of stuff because it assumes that
I'll never mention it again.
It assumes that you can
influence
reason with somebody
each other.
Like Doug Ford who has
is
on this like egocentric power trip with like redesigning the license plates, redesigning the logo, And I love this, that, you know, Lisa McLeod actually, you know, went off on I guess it was Dalton McGuinty back in 2006 when they redesigned the Trillium logo. And like, why are we wasting time on this? Well, you know, the logo was redesigned 12 years ago, and now we're wasting time on it again. Cool. What do you have to say about that, Lisa McLeod? Nothing, of course.
Bring back the original one. And smoking in public places. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they want.
Yeah, bring back country style so we can all go have coffee, donuts, and a cigarette.
Donuts that taste like DeMarie.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But this went off
Give
the rails.
Give us a place to drink coffee
but
and a place to smoke.
Da-da-da-da-da. I hope no kids are listening.
No.
But yeah.
I was joking,
the
kids.
The transit thing is it's just, it's, you know, there's no, John Tory did his diplomatic best.
It was like, thanks?
It's like, thanks, but I have like lots. It's great when we get transit investment, but I have lots of questions. And it's like, if you're making a big announcement like this where you're, you know, you're introducing basically a whole new transit map, where is the feds? Where is the city? John Tory should have been there. All the Toronto City Council should have been there. Instead, it was the Doug Ford show, mm-hmm. and this budget is the Doug Ford show. And it's got all the cool things Doug Ford likes, like tailgating and more casinos and, you know,
yeah,
subway,
this
subway,
man
subways.
Who doesn't drink. I think he's throwing
credits.
The alcohol announcements around.
Yeah.
Which means something's going to happen. But we will have more on this, right? More to come.
Well, Doug Ford's not going away.
The budget, yours to discover. Right.
Speaking of not going away, Donald Trump had a busy weekend. Surprisingly, golf-free. He stayed in Washington.
That is a small miracle.
He stayed in Washington and fired half the Homeland Security Department. So, Christian Nielsen is out as the Homeland Security Secretary. She succeeded John Kelly, who was punished by being made the White House Chief of Staff. She has been fired, and it sounds like it's because she refused to reinstate child separation at the border, having told Donald Trump several times that it was his executive order that stopped
no,
it in the first place.
No, it wasn't.
And that it was, you know, kind of illegal because they were going to court over it. And Donald Trump's response to that was, and I quote, "I don't care." That was
right.
Followed up by the resignation of the acting, emphasis on acting, deputy secretary,
mm-hmm.
who had to resign because Donald Trump appointed someone completely random instead of following the Homeland Security line of succession.
The hierarchy.
Mm. So that leaves, where did I write it all down? So there's no permanent DHS secretary, no permanent deputy secretary. No permanent Secret Service director, no permanent FEMA director, no permanent ICE director, because the guy they had nominated had his name withdrawn. He wasn't hardcore enough for Donald Trump. And there's no permanent inspector general at the Homeland Security Department either. So that's like seven positions.
Let's get temps. We can pay them less.
Yeah. It's not, Homeland Security, for people who don't know, is the second biggest part of the United States government after the Department of Defense. So not that big a deal that they apparently have no one that has been confirmed by the Senate in positions that are all basically filled with acting people in acting positions.
Yeah.
So yeah, cool. I hope there isn't like somebody who wants to attack the United States and right.
Take out the temps. Yeah, that giant sucking sound is America's defense and homeland security budget. Just trashing everything. 32 is the list so far of people that have fired or resigned, mostly resigned, as of, I guess, the 8th of April on Trump's hot list.
Yeah.
So, and it's going to get longer. We're past halfway, finally. Are we? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, halfway was in January.
As far as the numbers game goes, it's halfway. Kevin I knew I was going to blow it. McNeelan. It's a good Northern Irish name.
Yeah.
McAleenan is not a hardliner, but
appointed by Obama.
Again, he's only a temp as well, right? So,
well, he was like the head of the U.S. Customs and Border Authority.
Oh, it's not as if he's inexperienced. I don't want to be flip.
No,
I don't want to make it sound like they just picked whoever.
He oversaw a certain small subsection of Border Authority.
But it would also seem, you were talking about the family separation, it seems like he was one of the people, I guess, was a...
He was in favor.
That advocated for it. Yeah. So, but he was also, at some point in this, caught up in a lie saying, no, I wasn't in favor of that. So, I mean, he's already somebody cut in the Trump style saying one thing. It's like, no, I didn't actually say that. What I actually said was this, mm-hmm. even with presented with the direct evidence. So we're seeing pretty much more of the same. But there's also, and in the background, is the famous... becoming famous, Stephen Miller, the aide, the mystery man, Stephen Miller, who seems to have been given carte blanche to kind of drive this, right? He's a Trump advisor. You've seen this guy?
He's also the portrait of Dorian Gray.
Yeah. He was the guy that had the interview and he had like the spray on hair is probably the one you've seen.
I actually forgot about that.
Now he doesn't have the spray on hair anymore. But if you're trying to visualize who this dude is, he's the guy. He also supposedly looks like Pauly Shore. I don't know. If you're trying to picture who this person is, because we're on the radio.
He looks like Let me draw you a picture from Despicable Me. But real.
Yeah, and attitude-wise, I think sort of amplifies that a little bit. But
and very racist.
He seems to be the where this is all coming from. He's fighting in immigration reform and behind the, I believe he was the brains, in quotes, of the Muslim majority travel ban, which caused complete chaos at one point. But he's just a guy. Like, he's not an elected person. He's just like a backgrounder who has Trump's ear and is probably kissing his butt. is able to drive this agenda that isn't, it seems to be front and center now. And every time Trump goes to the border and there's an announcement, they're coming through there. Mega wall. What was this? Oh, the wall line. The wall. It was like some pure wall. It was like, what the hell are you talking about? It's like they're coming. It's almost
we're
like
building a wall.
It's like you're pointing out where the ants are coming in the house. They're coming in here. They're coming in there. They're coming here.
Well, I mean, yeah,
we have good wall here. They right. will not come in now.
That was.
Doing enough.
Yeah. All this comes on top of last week where he wanted to shut down the border, the Mexican border.
Yeah.
Wanted to shut it down. You know, it's not like there's $500 billion of trade that happens every day at the
every
Mexican border
or something. Yeah,
but yeah, he wanted shut it down. And then I think Christian Nielsen was one of the people who talked him off the ledge on that. And then he talked about like shutting down the border at El Paso, but that seems to have been gone nowhere. And then later,
let's make him forget so he doesn't do it.
Well, that seems to be the modus operandi, right?
Yeah.
And then later he's also talking about how Mexico needs to start like policing its southern border. And there was a news story about how Mexico had been sort of rousting people who are coming up from Central America. And Trump's like, you see, I did that. And people in the know are saying, well, nothing really different. Like, Mexico's been doing that all along. But because the traffic is so heavy and there's only so much Mexico can do. And then yesterday Donald Trump is talking about how talking about sending more military to the border, but they can't get too rough because otherwise people will get mad. Talking about getting rough on like poor families and children who are trying to escape
who you've separated from their parents. Yeah,
right. You know, what is wrong with you? It's crazy making. But to go back to Nosferatu, Stephen Miller, if nothing else, having Stephen Miller brought back in the news has brought people back to sharing that clip of him in like high school looking like an extra in a Kid and Play video, talking about like why they have janitors, why do I have to clean up after myself? Isn't that what we have janitors for? Which just lets you know he's been a total and complete D-bag since his Santa Monica high school days. But Stephen Miller, there's an interesting detail in this that he and Jared Kushner are apparently butting heads because Stephen Miller has been this hardliner. Meanwhile, Jared Kushner, who is basically in charge of everything, has been kind of putting together some kind of immigration reform package. Nobody really knows what that looks like because what you do in the shadows is where Jared Kushner lives.
But needs music,
yeah,
organ music.
But what's interesting is like if there's really friction between Miller and Kushner, that's not good for Miller. It might be good for the human race as a whole, but it's not good for Miller in terms of his political influence. Because I mean, revisiting some of the books that have been written about the administration, the Kushner Javanka team has rubbed against Bannon. They've rubbed against Priebus. They've rubbed against Christie. All those people are out of the loop now. And so if it's Miller's turn, you know, does this end with like Trump having to side with the kids again and get rid of like the guy who's basically the Svengali or the Rasputin behind all these?
And
like,
he'll never things. Not side with the kids, right?
Probably. There was
a comment Lindsey Graham attributed to Lindsey Graham was said, "As long as Miller is in charge of negotiating immigration, we are going nowhere." So he's saying nothing is ever going to advance on this file if Miller has anything to do with it. Even Miller's childhood rabbi said this guy is like garbage. This guy is a waste of time.
Can you imagine?
If the rabbi doesn't like you, you're like...
Can you imagine how terrible you have to be for the preacher at your childhood church or temple to
go on the record with
a reporter and talk about what garbage you are? Mm-hmm. Like, think about where you are. And think about where Stephen Miller is, where his childhood rabbi is talking to reporters about...
I was like, really? The rabbi?
About what a bottom-feeding mess of a human beating he is.
Like, if I got it right, one of the uncles came out, too. It's like his family have all turned on him. It's like, that's not us. This guy's he's gone rogue. We have no idea.
Right. Keep in mind, Stephen Miller is the guy who, if his own immigration policies were in place when his family immigrated to the United States at the beginning of the 20th century, would not have got in.
Yeah.
So.
And probably Trump too, right?
Well, definitely.
The German-born granddad, but not the dad. He keeps insisting the dad is born in Germany. It's like, my father's German. No, well, sort of, but
Obama's birth certificate. He needs to look at his own birth certificate.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure Trump wakes up and says, who am I, like every day, so.
Oh, my goodness, don't joke.
No, though. There's all that comment coming, like you were talking about last week, the oranges comment.
Oh, yeah.
I looked it up, and he kept saying it. You know, if a flub maybe once is one thing, but he kept doing it. It was like,
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when you're used to not being corrected, because no one can correct Trump, right? So it just ain't happening.
Right.
But, it'll always be.
But he refuses to be corrected, too, because I was watching some White House scrum live where they're in the Oval with the pool spray, and they're trying to give them the bum's rush, trying to get them out of the room. I think it was with I can't remember who. I think it was – no, it wasn't the Irish Prime, but somebody was in the Oval Office, and they're trying to get all the press out, and he keeps talking. He's like, oh, by the way, this child separation thing – All Obama's idea. Obama built the cages. And the press is like, hold on, what?
Yeah.
And then he goes on this spiel for another 5 minutes about how it's all Obama's fault. And then he goes, oh, thank you very much. And before the press can ask a follow-up question, you hear the White House aides going, everyone, out. And I mean, that feeds
into
it, too.
And then the fake news reports.
He lives in this perfect little bubble where it's never his fault. All his ideas are great. And that reinforces the thing where he's calling Christian Nielsen early in the morning and saying, like, why aren't you breaking the law to make my policies happen? And suddenly she becomes like the vestibule in the bad guy. When Christian Nielsen, I'm sorry, is every inch the terrible person Stephen Miller is, she just has at least some thought of what is legally viable.
She has actual experience too, right? She's the long-termer as opposed to Steve Miller just shows up because he's an advisor of a sort.
Well, Max Boot had a good idea that Donald Trump should appoint Stephen Miller as the Homeland Security Secretary if he's running it anyway. You know, put it to the test. Have Stephen Miller sit before a Senate confirmation hearing.
And watch them tear him apart, probably.
Well, watch the Democrats tear him apart before. Well, what would happen to Republicans? Like, are Republicans going to actually treat him like the rubberneck he is?
Oh, I'm sure there's some dislike there as well, right?
Well, I mean, but put Lindsey Graham... I don't know if Lindsey Graham's on the Homeland
Security
Committee.
He's always on those committees.
Put him to the test, because Lindsey Graham, you know, has this Jekyll and Hyde thing where one day he's the most pro-Trump person you'll ever find, and the other day he's highly critical.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let these people put their money where their mouth is. Nominate Stephen Miller, and let's see what happens. If we're going to go circus, let's go full circus.
Or get Steve Miller and the Steve Miller Band. Couldn't be any worse, probably. So.
It literally couldn't be
any
worse.
I'm a space cowboy.
Let's put Captain Obvious as the new head of the Department of Defense.
He's got a pretty cool uniform, so he might be the guy.
He has like one of those Noriega uniforms where it's like the medals have no meaning. Anyway.
Beautiful. They're fixed. We fixed it.
Yeah. We fixed America. You're welcome. We're going to take a break and then come back and try and fix some of our own problems here in Canada because Lord knows we've got some. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Oh my goodness, if that doesn't want to make you live in this province, I don't know what would.
That's
that
freaking
would.
Patriotism in the tank.
Such production values we used to have in this province, I don't know about
that's
now.
That's branding. Branding.
Yeah, from 1967, that's from the Expo 67 album written by Dolores Clayman, who also wrote the Hockey Night in Canada theme, which, in my opinion, should probably be our national anthem, realistically. And, of course, A Place to Grow. A Place to Stand, sorry. Give us a place to stand. I think it's called A Place to Stand. Ontario's unofficial anthem, if we had one. So.
Cool.
He's like, yep, next.
Next.
I was far too excited about that song.
Yeah, after bitching about it through the whole freaking commercial break.
I did that too. Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of bitches, I kid. Hate groups.
Yo.
In Canada, far-right extremists, if you want
to
know
bitches.
If you want to know who we were talking about, see Monday's release from Facebook where they banned several of them from their platform. So we're talking about Faith Goldie, we're talking about Kevin Goudreau, the Soldiers of Odin, the Wolves of Odin.
Odin.
So somehow those two became separate. I guess the Soldiers weren't extreme enough for the Wolves.
There was a split.
The Canadian Nationalist Front, which sounds awesome, and the Aryan Strike Force.
He says in jest, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get the wrong idea. Aryan Strike Force,
Aryan
which sounds
Strike
like a really
Force,
bad movie. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. We're just going to mock you.
But it's concerning because there was a poll from Main Street that asked if people thought that what was the biggest national security threat to Canada, and the majority said it was far right extremist groups 44.3%, 55.2% actually are of the opinion that there isn't a lot of extremists in the Muslim faith, or that it's not as big a threat as it maybe it once was. Now people are looking to these far-right extremist groups like the Soldiers of Hate, Soldiers of Odin.
Might as well be the Soldiers
Might as well
of
be
Hate.
The Soldiers of Hate. Or good old Faith Goldie, who has now been banned from Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, PayPal, and somehow Airbnb?
Yeah, they got her number. I guess she uses a real name. I don't know. Yeah, she's getting banned from everything. But of course, it's like, you see, you know, in the old days, we didn't need the internet. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to be the pamphleteer on the corner? Like with, and I remember the ridiculous racist pamphleteers in the corner. She would fit in perfectly with those clowns.
I remember, I grew up in Georgetown, and I remember one Saturday morning, people in Klan regalia showed up downtown with pamphlets. And they were basically chased out of town. It was like literally like with the banjo music.
Wow.
What
would be like 25 years?
At least.
We'll look it up.
Well, I have the papers at home.
Oh, excellent. I want to know more about that.
Because it was like literally the biggest thing that ever happened in Georgetown since Follow That Bird shot there.
Oh, a study in contrast. And then the Klan came.
Right.
And we ran them out of town with pitchforks.
Right?
Damn right. Yeah.
Also, Michael Douglas shot a movie in Georgetown back like when he was like becoming like between like Romancing the Stone and when he was in the streets of San Francisco, he shot a movie in Georgetown. But that's enough about that. What I find interesting is this has been a pretty big week for the social media bunch, because you have in the UK them kind of really coming down hard, even in the midst of like the Brexit debacle that's going on. By the way, they're spared until Halloween, which is great irony.
What a choice of day.
Still won't be a deal. But the they're coming down hard on the social media companies, basically coming up with their sort of own commission that if there's anything that's like hate speech, anything that's like revenge porn, even the sale of like illicit goods or like illegal goods, they're going to be on the lookout for that. And I think at this point, it's only a matter of time before all countries start thinking about coming up with their own regs. And at that point, what happens to Facebook and actually the whole FANG group, Facebook, Amazon, Twitter, Netflix, Google?
The complete list of all media currently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were complaints that this has been a long time coming, and of course there's a lot of people that are very glad it's happened, and rightly so. I guess some have not slipped through the ban, but I've seen stuff shared around from the Yellow Vests Canada that I think would probably belong in that category too. They've dodged this. That's not to say that they're going to be immune from this. It would seem that the main driver behind this, and I guess if you think back as well to the Quebec mosque shooting in 2017, seems to be, at least this is what CSIS is saying, because they released a study, right, that was the kind of the tipping point where it started to amp up. They do these studies online and are able to follow what people are Googling, not to say the hate is strictly a Google-oriented thing, but in terms of the dissemination of information, because here's an example. Supposedly the alleged Christchurch shooter donated €1,500 to a group called Generation Identity, which I had never heard of. It sounds relatively benign, but they're a hate group. It turns out they're identitarians. Everybody's got to have a handle now, right? So these people are like, white is right and the usual. But it seems they're active in Canada, have a presence in Canada. So the kind of international networking makes all of it far easier for the dissemination of hate. And if you don't crack down on that somehow, and of course there's always a workaround, but just the sort of blatant stuff. I mean, I've had stuff in my feed, join this group, and I'm looking at it. I guess it's because you do a lot of political, and probably the same for you, lots of political stuff on your computer. Facebook taps into that, and then they're like, you might like this. And I can tell you, at least two of them, as soon as I see a weird flag and something like, well, let's say Generation Identity, not that I've had that come up, but it'd be like a small group, I guess, looking for members. It's like, what on earth makes you think I want to join this? So it just proves like the algorithms aren't perfect, but anybody that's regularly Googling and checking political things will get this stuff or get an appeal to join in, right? It's like, oh, really?
It's not even necessarily political stuff, because there was a study that a lot of people are being, particularly young men, are being radicalized through video game videos. You know, you're surfing on YouTube and you're watching people play Fortnite or Red Dead Redemption or something. And then within a couple of clicks, you're into one of these sort of Gamergate sites that talks about the horrors of women taking part in the video game industry. And that sort of spins you off into weirdo directions.
Turns into an incel or something.
Men's rights. Yeah, men's rights, incels and all that. And then from there, it's like it's a hop, skip, and the jump to, more virulent things like soldiers. I mean, not that incel movement isn't virulent, certainly, because it's taken its share of victims. Ask people in Toronto almost this time last year, actually. But, it's a short trip from there to stuff like Soldiers of Odin or to Yellow Vests. And I think one of the reasons why Yellow Vests escape is because, and I think this is part of the fault of the mainstream media too, is that there's been an inordinate focus on the economic message of the Yellow Vest, which was a part of in the baked in the cake coming out of France, especially. And I did a little thing on Politico about this week, that it's baked in the cake, the economic message. But if you look at a lot of the big mouths of the Yellow Vest movement, it is anti-UN, it is anti-immigrant, it is anti-diversity. You don't have to try hard to find pictures of Yellow Vest protesters with signs that say, like, get us out of the UN, basically.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you have to specify that, though, that that's the Canadian version, right? The French US, the French Yellow Vests work on a completely different level.
Yes.
But on a political level, I saw a bit of a back and forth with Senator Leo Houssakos, I think his name is, to Chrystia Freeland.
Yes.
And they were
were
talking a bit about this. And this is what Houssakos said, and I found this interesting because I think there was more to it than just... He said at this committee, I find it disturbing to believe that there is a politician in this country, meaning Freeland, that believes white supremacy is a threat to our way of life in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure whether he went on a little bit, whatever. I think he may have been doing this to sort of deflect a bit because there's a picture making the rounds and there was an interview too of Faith Goldie and Andrew Scheer on The Rebel, right? So it's pretty obvious that, and also... Speaking of the Yellow Vests, there was a Yellow Vest protest in Ottawa where there was a whole pile of speakers, and one of them was Faith Goldie, and sharing the podium was Andrew Scheer.
Although they were on at different times of day.
They were on different times of day, but whatever.
Just to be clear.
You're speaking to the same gang.
It's not like they were in the green room together is what I'm saying.
But, and Doug Ford won't do it either. He will not say, I disown Faith Goldie completely, or has he? I don't think so.
Well, they had to twist his arm for a week in question period before he would, because she showed up with a bunch of her people at some... Ford thing, and they got their picture taken.
Well, that's it. It becomes, I get my picture taken with a lot of people, right?
But
there's more to it when you're getting your picture taken with Faith Goldie.
But again,
it's messaging.
Right. It's not the fact that the picture was taken because, like, I have terrible sort of blindness when it comes, like, I have face blindness when it comes to celebrities. And I think I've told this story before either on the show or on end credits where I was. At the Yonge Dundas Square coming out of a movie, and I was going down the big escalator while someone was coming up the escalator on the other side, and I was like, I know this person. Where do I know this person from? And I get to the bottom of the escalator, and I remembered it was Michael Cera.
Very cool.
And
Brampton's own.
But I mean, it took like 5 minutes of racking my brain trying to figure, and this was Michael Cera, who a lot of people know because from his movies and from Arrested Development and things. What if it is somebody like Faith Goldie? Would I be able to recognize Faith Goldie on site?
I think so.
Maybe.
No, she has a certain look, as does Michael Cera, but Michael Cera just looks like a...
To be fair, this was the summer of he was filming Scott Pilgrim, so he had a bit of a weirdo haircut.
Oh, yeah, that big puffy haircut.
So, again, off topic.
But not
but
a
still,
fascist.
Yeah. It's one thing to say, like... You know, I get my picture taken with a lot of people. Okay, I have enough humanity in me to let you slide on that. What the next words I want out of your mouth is, I did not recognize this person. I was taking a lot of pictures, and of course, I denounce 100% the racist, anti-Semitic ideology of a neo-Nazi, emphasis on neo-Nazi, like Faith Goldie. But that doesn't happen. Doug Ford had to be hammered for a week in question period before he did that. Andrew Scheer, someone who was on the board of Rebel Media, is running the conservative campaign. And this is after almost everybody in the leadership campaign, with the exception of Michael Sona and probably Rick, I can't remember his name, but he was on the show. There were a couple of people who didn't do Rebel Media appearances, but almost everybody in that race did.
And it's discussion like this that makes them want to kill us off, but that's another story, right?
But I mean, it's not that
crazy
hard.
Crazy Marxist nonsense.
And there was that slap fight between Trudeau and Scheer in question period yesterday. And Scheer's like, of course I denounce 100%. But when you do stuff like that, sort of in the spur of the moment, it's the wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And all the Sons of Odin crowd.
His fingers were crossed behind his back. And like,
right. And that's what they're thinking.
Yeah.
This kind of segues nicely into the possibility of election interference, because that also came out this week. You had the Minister of Democratic Institutions, Karina Gould, delivering, I guess, a scary report about the possibility of interference. They're not predicting like 2016-style interference, as was in the United States election, but, I mean, that also could be due to Canada's size and... relative,
and we're more savvy. No,
well, no, one would hope, but I mean,
that was part of the report was that more Canadians like to get their news from what is considered reliable sources. You know, the classic papers, TV, CBC, rather than, and it is a bit of a narrower field here, obviously, than in the States, because it's just you're saturated by traditional and other media in the States, and they rarely talk about Canada down there, right? They really mm-hmm. do. So it's they're focused on that. We tend to have a more international approach to it. We like to think we have an international approach here as well. We're definitely not fake news.
I'm glad you debate threw me. That in there.
Debate me that we're fake news.
But
it's all true.
But I mean, it seems like there's really no drive either. And this is the thing I found interesting about what happened in the UK, that they're kind of hammering the tech companies. And Christina Gould comes out, or Karina Gould, I should say, came out and said, "Well, we've had several meetings with tech companies this year, and we've gotten good responses from some of them." And it's like, okay, what does that mean?
We don't want to name any names. But,
right, we don't want to name names, but still, it's only going to be tremendous public pressure that is going to drive. I mean, we've seen this. That's going to drive the media companies to act. They don't want to be regulated. They think they're going to be regulated. We've sort of seen that in sort of the... I would call pathetic attempts on the part of Facebook to try and rein itself in. They don't really want to be regulated. They think it might happen. They're kind of hedging their bets. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take a widespread public demand for these companies to sort of be reined in. And one of the things that's Elizabeth Warren, not to get into U.S. politics too much, she's proposed breaking up big tech companies, which, I mean, if there was ever like a real push behind that, mm-hmm. that would probably force them to really shape up. That would depend on the U.S. electorate, though.
Yeah,
and it would also depend on if Elizabeth Warren can push her way to the front of the pack, too.
They would have a massive fight on their hands yeah. if that happened.
Well, for sure, but I think it's a fight worth having. Because, you know, what is Facebook now? Facebook is it's a sharing platform, yes, to share mm-hmm. information, share pictures with friends and things. But it's also your phone book now.
Yep.
You know, if you're looking for like contact information, where are you going to go? The yellow pages? No, you're going to go to Facebook. You're going to go to the business page on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's a news site. It's a news aggregate.
And it's also
information platform.
Boost this post, right? So
it's an advertiser.
Yeah.
It's all, and we regulate all these things. You couldn't call up Bell back in the day when they were printing yellow pages and put a fake ad for a fake business in the yellow pages.
Although I'm sure it was done, but it's a bit of a production, right? But.
Right.
You can't just do it right away. You can do that in minutes.
Right.
And you can disseminate incorrect information in minutes, perhaps seconds, as well.
That brings to the other part
of this. The bots are on the rise.
That you brought up, which is the fake news portion and the Buffalo Chronicle.
The Buffalo Chronicle,
because
yeah.
one thing Justin Ling pointed out was that you can get a masthead, you can buy a WordPress site, and within 10 minutes, you have something that you post a bunch of articles from the Associated Press, from the Canadian Press, semi-official looking outlets, and just throw them all up, and bango blammo, you have what looks like a legitimate news site. And one of the things we're finding out is that an inordinate number of older people, the people who are typically pay attention and vote in elections, are finding themselves sharing fake news. But I mean, more than that, we also have people who really should know better.
People in politics.
Like Warren Kinsella and Mark Toohey sharing this 100% bullplop from Buffalo Chronicle without any seam or care that or taking a minute to say, oh, I've never heard of the Buffalo Chronicle before. Maybe I should see what it's about before I start spreading this to my thousands of followers.
Exactly. Why does Buffalo care so much about Ottawa? I just said,
yes. You
go down to the States and you see news. Unless something exploded in Canada or somehow affects the States, they don't care. They really don't care.
And it happened right after NCC-Lavalin broke. What a coincidence.
Yeah, they have a section called, because I've seen it, Ottawa Politics. Spotlight on Ottawa.
Spotlight
on Ottawa. Yeah. So the first article that I saw that was being widely shared again was under when the SNC-Lavalin thing was happening, and the headline alone is like onion worthy. It was deep and penetrating relationship may taint Butt's testimony. So taking it face value, you say, is this like a Simpsons joke or some kind of onion joke? It's a groaner, and I saw it. And I was like, okay, the headline in itself sounds like fake news. And then Karina Gould makes a couple of appearances as well. All these people, it's like, But there's no background. Like, any news site or any site you can go to, like a title page or about. Right. I always go to about. Someone
that's
like
key,
Guelph
yeah.
Politico yeah. in studio here. You know who he is. Here's the guy right here. I can see him.
I do have an about page.
He has an about page. Yeah. You look it up. We Open Sources has an about page.
Absolutely.
You want to find out about us, we are here. You try that with Buffalo Chronicle, there's a list of names. Like, it's just like a little garbage list
Not
of names.
Not on the articles.
No. So the articles aren't attributed to anybody. Some of it is recycled, like you said, from real sources. So you do this blender of like, okay, we got this from Canada Press, and I'm just going to write this one about, you know, the deep and penetrating relationship. Or let's say one was like, Chrystia Freeland is gunning for Justin Trudeau's job. With
right.
no basis and no background and no information. It's just like somebody sitting in their gooch writing stuff. Sorry, their gooch. Can I say that on the air? I don't know. Somebody sitting in their
it's
underwear,
a little late now.
Blogging away. It's garbage. Garbage. But yet it passes somehow. Like you say, people see it and they're like, ah, well, it's probably
it's,
true. Oh, what's his name? The one of the dragons.
Right.
Reblogged one. He said, well, even if this is just 10% true, then.
And it was 100% not true.
And it's 100% not true. Is it? It should be 100% true. It's like, where are you coming from, dude? Like this.
You know what should be 100% true?
Even if it's 1% true, it's
that
true.
That it should rain chocolate. That should be 100% true. But we live in reality, and it rains water. Anyway, the
most
that,
days.
That's yeah. fair enough. That's one thing that got me. And there was another headline about the Trudeau government having a deal with Google to block all searches for NCC-Lavalin. And you read that, and it's like...
That was on the Chronicle?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And it's like, well,
that doesn't surprise me at all.
How do you think we find information on this show? You know, we're Googling
Lots
things.
Lots of Googling.
And guess what? It's really wicked easy to Google information on
yes.
NCC-Lavalin and the scandal.
But what takes the time is that we scrutinize it as well. It's not, we don't take anything. And I mean, well, except maybe CBC or BBC or names that we know. But if there's something from another source,
yeah.
I definitely pick it apart. And that's what happened with the Buffalo Chronicle. And it's not alone. There are other little sites out there like that. But
right.
this is the one that's come to the fore because Warren Kinsella, other people in politics, they're all retweeting this stuff.
Right.
And it's like, and Ling and et cetera, like,
just,
this is incorrect.
Jason Ling, excuse me, Justin Ling, because Warren Kinsella got that wrong too. Justin Ling, you know, made
Should've
a point
Googled
of
them, huh?
like, yeah, no, you think? He made this in sort of like an expose that was on Canada Land. And I think that the danger is, and it isn't just on the government to sort of block this stuff, and this is something I've been thinking a lot about too. There is an onus on media literacy, and this should be coming from the government, yes. It should be coming from schools to a certain extent as well. It also should be coming from us in the media in terms of being open and available and talking about how we get information, how we come up with the stories. And I do this a lot on my own site when I on Politico, when I'm referring back to things like pieces of information I find, I try to put in a link because you should be able to go and find that information yourself.
Oh yeah, and you see my blogs too. There's like 20 links
right,
at the bottom.
And in this regard,
yeah.
people mock Wikipedia a lot for like you know maybe not being a great source of information. One of the things I will say about Wikipedia is they show the receipts. They put in the links
yeah.
where you can go and find that where they got that information. In most cases, it doesn't happen in every case, but in most cases, there's a link there where you can go and find that piece of information yourself. And I think this is what we really kind of desperately need is more media literacy because it's scary that so many people are being suckered in by this stuff. And some of it is bringing their own biases into it too, but also a lot of it is not being able to tell what the difference is between the Buffalo newspapers and the Buffalo Chronicles.
Well, funny enough, the Buffalo newspaper is called the Buffalo News. Like the
That's
actual
right.
paper.
Yeah.
Which I follow so I can see.
Simple.
You know,
keep it simple.
What's going on in Depew and Lackawanna and Chickawaga.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. Anyway.
That's my life. Cue the violin. Actually, cue the end credits because it's time to go.
Actually, that's the name of another show on CFRU. Anyway, that will wrap it up here. That is it for this week's show. We will have an interview with Mike Schreiner on next week's show. We're going to be talking to him over the weekend about Ontario budget stuff and maybe some other, you know, provincial stuff. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say, so you should tune in for that. You can find more of us at our website, End Credit. You freaking ruined it. You ruined it, you ruiner. Anyway, opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. Twitter or at OS_Guelph on Twitter. You can find past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scott Hertz on Facebook, Scott Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at wordpress.fakenews.blog.whatever.ninja. Just Google me. You'll find the thing.
Spinnerbook.ninja/fakenews. Sounds good. And DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we will see you then.